It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Sandy Rios coming to you live from the Federation for American Immigration Reform Radio Row at the Phoenix Park Hotel, just across from the Capitol. And there are like 90-something hosts here today all over this building, all over this hotel, interviewing people whose lives are intersecting with what we see on the nightly news every night. And that is what's happening at our border, what's happening in cities. We just talked to sheriffs yesterday. We talked to angel moms who have paid the ultimate price for our lack of enforcing our immigration laws. Let me just tell you, more than 1 million people will have been apprehended crossing our border illegally this year. That's apprehended. And, of course, the vast majority of those who are now being caught are allowed to remain here. They're using the political asylum system. And there are backlogged cases, and you know all about that. Immigration, by the way, is now the number one issue for voters in this upcoming election. Well, a group of people who are particularly keen to this, whose lives have been so impacted by what's happening at the border, are ranchers who live on that vast southern border. Sometimes they ranch, sometimes they are farmers, but they have varying reasons. But their ranches the border, and there is no fence there for the most part. And two of those are with me this morning. Peggy Davis is here with her daughter, Marlo Compton. They are cattle ranchers from Tombstone, Arizona, and that's Cochise County, just so you know. And the entire family lives there, the Davis family, on the Davis Ranch. It's 25 miles north of the Mexican border. And interestingly enough, Marlo, who's the daughter here, Marlo's great-great-grandfather founded the ranch when he came to southern Arizona in 1867. You guys, do you know anything more about that than that? Anything about him, Peggy?
I don't. He wasn't my great-grandfather. He was my husband's. He could probably
tell you more
about wrong side of the family.
All right, we'll have to do Ancestry.com and find out more about him. That's a long way away. I mean, long time ago, 1867,
yes.
To be on. No, Americans are not used to having that kind of a continuous connection with their past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's so unique.
Yeah, he was, but I do know this about him. He was a very dynamic personality, and he carried the mail, I believe, from Gila Bend to Yuma and back and forth across the territories back in the day, and he was quite a character. He fought Indians, and
he probably would have to fight Indians if he was going to be out there at that time.
Yeah, first it was Apaches, and then it became Mexican Nationals later.
Yeah. And just to be clear, is your ranch, it says 25 miles mm-hmm. north of the border, so there's the 25 miles of another ranch, or is there
other ranchers?
Okay. Mm-hmm. And is there a fence or a wall in between you guys and
immediately south of us, 25 miles, there is now.
Okay.
Since 2006, they put in a piece there. It's 18 feet.
What has that made a difference?
Somewhat.
18 feet only?
It slowed it down.
Mm-hmm. You mean high?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, I don't mean long.
I'm thinking that wouldn't seem to make a lot.
18 foot high.
Okay.
It's probably, there's probably about, 30, 40 miles of that kind of fence there. It made somewhat of a difference, but if you don't have Border Patrol agents right on the international boundary, they crawl over it, or they tunnel under it, or they find a way, cut through it at sometimes, and just come right on in. But you know, for the most part, we don't have the majority of the agents are not right on the international boundary. They are north of me.
Okay. Let's go back for a second, because were you a rancher before you married your husband?
Yes.
Or is this a whole new world?
But I was raised in Colorado.
Okay.
And on a ranch. And then I moved to Arizona in December of 1972. And I didn't even know what the Border Patrol was. Yeah, I knew that an illegal came through every now and then, and my husband's family always fed them, and so I always fed them and gave them water and you know, took care of them when they came across. They were very respectful, and we were to them, and they were to us, and we were neighbors. And then things began to change, and their attitudes changed. And by the time I had a family, we had an illegal alien problem.
Yeah. You have how many kids?
Two.
So Marlo is
She's
your
the oldest.
Daughter. Marlo, okay, so a lot of times kids don't go into the family business, you know,
yeah.
Like if you can have this great legacy. Your dad's a dentist. He has this great practice,
right.
But you don't want to be a dentist. I mean, what drew you? Obviously love ranching. You still wouldn't be there.
Right. Well, and for a few years when I first got married, my husband and I lived in Colorado, and we weren't as involved, and I didn't think I would ever be able to again. And there was a time, I'll be honest, that the illegal immigration issue was so bad on our ranch that it was very discouraging, and I maybe didn't want to be there anymore. It was really bad for a time. We were able to come back after my kids were born, and we were able to come back, and I absolutely love the heritage. I love the type of business. We live just 100 yards down the hill from my parents, and my kids are able to be sixth generation on that ranch, and I love everything about it except the border problem.
Yes, and we will talk about that, because we have to talk about that. That's why you're here. But I want to say something fun. Have you ever seen, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I have to, McLeod's Daughters? It's an Amazon series from out of Australia.
No.
It's about a family of ranchers, and it's about these two sisters who end up running the ranch, and it's huge, vast, in the western part of Australia.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not exactly a Sunday school piece, so I have to be careful. I'm just telling people it's not a Christian production, but it is really a great piece, and it's all about ranching. It's about dealing with the cows and the sheep and all of the things that you do. So do you guys actually do the work, or do you have hands that do most everything?
It's us. We do the work.
Like what? Like what's a day? What's a normal day, Peggy?
Well, I mean, day to day, my husband does most of it. But when we have to work cattle together, we do the riding and we do the gathering. Sometimes we have to rope them. Brand them, castrate them. We do it all.
And are involved in a lot of those day-to-day operations as well.
So how many family members live on your compound now?
Seven.
Seven?
Yeah. My husband and I, and then my daughter and her husband and her kids, and then my son is not married, and he lives there as well. So we need to, you know, take care of each other. So
sure. Well, all right, Marlo, when you said the illegal immigration problem got so bad you didn't want to go back, describe what are you talking about?
Okay. Well, when I was a little kid, they were the kinds of people that were coming through were what the media tries to convince you that they are today. They were those people looking for a better life. They were just looking for work. I remember my mom said she fed them all. I remember her sending me out when I was about four years old to go give food to strange men walking through, you know, that are sitting on the porch, and nobody was afraid, and they were those kinds of people. But things changed, and there got to be so many. I had some super scary situations when I was high school age. More than once, I'd open the barn door to feed horses, and once there were 13 men laying in the floor of the barn. That's intimidating.
Yeah.
I would ride over a hill once, and there's, you know, 20, a group of 20, and I'm trying to keep a safe distance from them. I have one really scary situation. About in 2001, early 2001, my dad, it was so bad, my dad had sent my mom and I to go take a concealed weapons course to defend, you know, for self-defense, and not long after that, there was a time where, just to set this up for people that don't understand how we live, it's very different than most people. The nearest neighbor is a mile away, and then from that, the nearest house is 7 miles.
Wow.
Our neighbor, my parents weren't home, and the neighbor wasn't home. And I had a man approach me on the front porch, and he was very confrontational, very agitated. I talked to him. I was inside the house. He was out. And he was holding his arm very strangely. I was reminded of a video during that course that I took and thought he had a knife in his jacket. So I talked to him for a long time, and he got real agitated, wanted a ride, wanted help. Anyway, long story short, he looked at me and he said, "We've been here all day, and there's nobody here but you. You're alone." And I was.
He said that to you?
He did.
You're how old?
22. I was 22, and yes, I was alone. There's not supposed to be another person within about 10-mile radius, you know. So I swallowed hard, and I remember telling myself, okay, you can do this, you can do this, and tried to be calm. And I looked at him and said, which was not true, I looked at him and said, "Oh, no, my dad's here. He's just on a different part of the ranch." It was just getting dark, just about to get dark. I said, "It's just about to get dark. He's coming home. You better hope he doesn't find you here when he gets back." And I could tell that he bought it when I looked at him. So he started to walk away, and I started calling everybody I knew. And I called Border Patrol, Sheriff's Department, family and friends. And we had a family member made it to me first. It took 25 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
So
did you have Carrie then? By then, did you have that gun?
No. And he was alone, which was unusual at the time, too. At that time, we had large groups of people coming through. So I kept thinking about who might be, you know, coming through a back window or behind me, and I was planning my route to the closest, you know, weapon I could find in my house and how I could get there. And so I had a route planned out, but kept telling myself, you can do this, stay calm, you know, yeah, you can do this. Yeah. Anyway, when law enforcement finally did get there, he had been there all day. Oh. There was footprints all around all the outbuildings and all the, you know, everywhere at the house. He got away, and we had a second house with a little apartment, and there was a butcher block on the counter, and the largest knife was gone out of the butcher block. Oh, man. I feel certainly blessed and felt very protected that day. I feel certainly blessed that I'm able to tell, because I know a lot of people aren't able to tell their story. And
yeah. All right. Well, Peggy, we don't have much time left, okay? So how have things changed? Have things gotten better? And with all this last surge, we're hearing about this, you know, this last few months, except for this August, mm-hmm. That it was just out. Did you guys bear the brunt of all of those people coming across?
We don't get the families with the kids from Honduras, and they haven't gotten to our part of the country yet. They are in Texas. So what we see are the drug runners that are left there in small groups coming through now, largely because our governor has been very supportive in helping our sheriff's department in Cochise County. But we know that might not always be the case. We may have a Democratic governor one day that does what New Mexico's governor has done to them. So,
which is what?
Well, she pulled all enforcement away from the border because there was no problem, and now she's overrun and she's busing the ones she doesn't want to Colorado. So I guess I should be glad she sent them to Colorado. But
that was your home state, so my feelings about that. Mm-hmm. How do ranchers feel about a wall? I mean, some people would argue that, you know, it's a blight and you're used to the wide open spaces, but how do people feel about that?
Some ranchers want one, some ranchers don't. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just like everybody
else.
Doesn't
seem like
country.
A necessary evil, though,
well,
at this point?
Exactly. Yeah. I think it's a sacrifice, in my opinion, that they need to make for the sovereignty of their nation.
Yeah, yeah.
This is mine and that's yours.
Yeah, exactly.
Stay on your own side of the fence.
Yeah, you guys understand fences better than most because of your cattle and everything. Peggy Davis and Marla Compton, her daughter, it's really fun and rewarding to meet both of you. What an interesting way of life. I know it's like...
Well, we appreciate somebody paying attention because we've been trying to get attention to the problem for many, many years.
Yeah, well, happy to do that. All right,
thank you.
Sandy Rios, coming up next, Ken Cuccinelli. Don't go away. Sandy Rios in the morning, AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios with you, and live at Radio Row on for Federation for American Immigration Reform. You've been hearing me all week talk about that. The thing you can't see is that my microphone keeps falling over. So if you lose me just for a second, it's probably the falling mic. You know, through the months that you've listened to me, you've often heard me interview Ken Cuccinelli. We don't often get to do it in person, but but today everything's changed because yes. Now Ken is with the administration. Of course, Ken was the Attorney General in Virginia. He led the fight against Obamacare. He also led that pretty successful. The final outcome hasn't happened. That challenge in the Supreme Court about whether we can throw out Obamacare completely, that was Ken Cuccinelli's brainchild.
Yeah, that's right? Coming up soon.
Yeah. So, like, really soon, like the fall, October, maybe?
Somewhere there, between there and December. The argument's going to be in the Supreme Court. So, Ken Paxton of Texas is leading that, and very capably and very aggressively, which is what you'd expect.
Yeah,
out of Texas.
But,
right?
But the thing that you're, the hallmark for you, Ken, is that you, I'm sorry, my mic is doing these weird things. It's distracting me. Is that you do come up with very clever solutions for the things. You think in a different way, but it always makes a ton of sense. I mean, I've seen you do this repeatedly through the years, come up with certain, like, how about this, or like a niche. You see things uniquely, and I think that's what I know that you're bringing to your current position. Ken is the acting director of the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, and I probably shouldn't say this. He's the acting because, you know, he's not exactly the poster boy for the establishment Republicans, so this is a good place for him to be.
Well, the president wasn't exactly a poster boy for establishment Republicans either.
Fit into
this administration comfortably.
You are in great company. We both know this. What you've accomplished a lot, Ken, and I want to talk about what you have, but I want to ask you, what is the thing that you're most proud of that you've been able to do since you've been in that position?
Well, USCIS is one of the three immigration agencies in the Department of Homeland Security. Us, ICE, does removals and Customs Border Protection, more famously called Border Patrol, guarding the border. And working together, I really feel like we've both turned the tide on the border. We're not done yet. And we've been communicating the problems better to the American people this summer than I think was going on before. And that's so important because the public's understanding really drives whether Congress will act or not.
Right.
So far they haven't, but they've at least stayed out of the president's way while we advance solutions that have driven down the number of illegals coming across the border. For this to really take hold long term, though, it's going to take a lot more communication like we're doing right now. And I appreciate you covering this topic as much as you do, because that's so important. Because Congress holds the keys in changing the laws that really are failing us in terms of our immigration system. And in their absence, it's all the president.
Boy, it is all the president. And it's amazing, honestly, what he's been able to do through people like you. By appointing good people like you.
Well, but he's also...
All the appointments have not been so good, but...
but he's also operated internationally in a way that's been very effective and totally unique from his predecessors. Republicans and Democrats have just been unwilling to use the sticks and carrots and sticks relationships with Mexico, with Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala. This president hasn't been afraid to do that. And you saw it even in 2019 with the tariffs in Mexico. You had Republicans and Democrats complaining about his willingness to be tough with Mexico, and what was the result? The result is the best cooperation we have seen in recent years from Mexico in reducing the flow to our southern border, and frankly, there are over 45,000 people in the Remain in Mexico program waiting their hearings in Mexico. They're not in this country. They haven't been released into the interior of the United States. A lot of families, and catch and release is now over. That means that people coming up to the southern border now need to know they are going to be detained until they get a court hearing. That's the path we're on now.
And that changes everything.
It changes everything.
Yeah.
You know, no catch and release gives us real control of the border, and it gives more dignity, frankly, to the entire immigration process. Even if people who really making a lot of fake asylum claims, what we see in my agency, are tying up the system. It doesn't mean they're getting released.
And I think I heard you say recently that that's causing a lot of the people that are waiting in Mexico to sort of turn back because they realize that they're bogus
asylum claims. Yeah, we don't
have
hard numbers on that, Sandy, yeah. But we do know that a good number of people who are being forced to wait in Mexico probably who know they don't have good asylum claims, they haven't been persecuted, they don't seriously face persecution here in the Western Hemisphere, some of them really are going home. And thus lightening the load of the whole system.
Something happened yesterday that was pretty disturbing to me, but I would really love your perspective on it. And that is a vote in the Senate. The president had declared what was happening on the border a national emergency,
right.
And therefore was able to, would by virtue of that declaration, use funds that are fungible, whatever, for the that are in Pentagon funding, military funding, to build a border wall. And so, what, 11 Republican senators voted against him. I think it was 11. It was Mitt Romney and Mike Lee. And
yeah, you know, Sandy, I'm reminded of President Bush declaring victory on the aircraft carrier. Turned out that was a bit premature. And you know, just look at the summer's numbers. In May, we hit the worst month for illegal crossings and apprehensions we've had in a long, long time. It was 144,000. By August, we had knocked that down to less than half, 64,000. But if you just look at that 64,000 number and take out the other 2019 months that were really horrific, that month is worse than every single one prior to 2019, all the way back to 2012, except two. Two. So we are still at crisis levels at the border. It just seems easier than May because it's less awful, right?
Yeah.
And I just think that the branch that isn't responsible for executing the laws, the legislature, just doesn't have the right perspective on what's really going on the border. Even though a lot of them have visited, they still don't have an appreciation for what we're contending with in faithfully executing the laws of the United States, which is what this president is doing. What we need Congress to do is amend these laws to fix the loopholes in our system. I mean, President Obama even wanted some of these loopholes closed. There are not differences on a couple of these issues between President Obama and President Trump's administrations. This is just common sense stuff. And it used to be that immigration policy was driven by common sense. Now it's become, as you and I have seen, this terrible political club of the left. And so the consensus that used to exist to enforce the law, protect our border, and protect American workers has gone away. But we have a president who's determined to do all that.
You know, I know the president and some of his staff are working on an immigration proposal. Of course, it's not going to go anywhere right now, given what's happening in Congress. But still, my understanding is that they are covering a lot of deep-seated problems, like just the whole notion that immigrants, okay, I don't know if this is in writing, but my impression is that they are going to concentrate on English, how important that is for the sovereignty of a nation to have a common language. And some of the things about we used to embrace about immigrants being self-sufficient, having skills,
yeah.
And all of that stuff. What can you say
that? We're actually doing that. In our agency at USCIS, we put out what's called a public charge rule. Public charge is an old legal term that just means you won't be a burden on the public if you want to be an immigrant here. It requires self-sufficiency. This has been in our federal law since we've had federal immigration laws in the late 1800s. And self-sufficiency is a core American value. This is not new. It isn't typically been controversial. So we put that regulation out. It's slated to go into effect October 15th.
Wow.
And
that's a big deal.
It's been a high priority of this president. We're enforcing a law that was passed in 1996 on a wildly bipartisan basis. I mean, people like Chuck Schumer, Steny Hoyer, Nancy Pelosi voted for this law. And now they complain that we're actually implementing it. But this president was determined to do that. And you know, I think the average American, if you just explain to them, all we're trying to do is enforce the requirement for self-sufficiency for people who want to come here as immigrants, they'd say, well, weren't we already doing this? And duh.
No.
You know, this is common sense, and the president is determined to see this implemented, and our agency is moving ahead. It's a big job, but we're moving ahead, getting ready for October 15th, and we're proudly going to be implementing this requirement for self-sufficiency.
You know, when I was growing up, I'm from a really small town in southern Illinois, and I remember a Dutch family coming to us, to our town. They were sponsored by, I think, the Presbyterian Church. It was a mom and dad and their five kids. And the church took care of them, made sure they had jobs, and they grew up to be, of course, wonderful members of the community. And the kids were all very successful. They just became one of us.
Well, and people who
and that's
really
the way it
truly
used to work.
Adopt this country and assimilate to America, or you know, they've made America stronger over the
Absolutely.
Years. Absolutely. And look, we're naturalizing more people last year and this year than the 5 years before.
Really.
So you know, people who say this president's against immigrants are just wrong. He's against illegal immigration, but we're working to make the legal system work better, more efficiently. But there's always an understanding from President Trump. The entire immigration system is set up for the benefit of America.
Mm-hmm.
This is about no one who comes to this country has a right to come here from another country. It is a pure privilege. And America has been the most generous country in the history of the world. And that includes in our immigration system. And part of that is our humanitarian immigration system, refugees, asylees, and so forth. And that has not stopped under President Trump. We're making it more reliable, doing better vetting of people to make sure we don't have threats coming here. That's been a major priority for this president. We're going to keep doing that.
Yes. And you know, I thought it was really stunning to hear the president say, much of what we're talking about, same but different, to an international audience at the UN General Assembly just a couple of days ago.
Yeah, he wasn't subtle.
No, but he laid down, he said, those of you who have these open borders policies, who are, you know, encouraging this massive migration, that is not kind. That's not kind. You're creating chaos. You're causing death and disease and illness and chaos. And I mean, those are my words. Whatever words he used, that's what he said. He also talked about the importance of each nation having pride in their own countries and in their own sovereignty. It was a stunning address.
Yeah, and none of this sort of mealy-mouthed stuff you've sometimes heard in the past from others. Very straightforward from the president. And you know, there was no mixed message received by people from other countries. They understand where America is and where we're going and why. And he proudly stands in an international organization and says, I'm for America. I'm America's president. My job is to make America better. And you all should have the same job for your country. And if frankly, everybody focused on doing that peacefully with their neighbors, you know, it'd be, you know, we'd be in, hey, I'd like to buy the world a Coke, you know, wouldn't it be, great?
Yeah.
And he is pushing, particularly our part of the world, this region, in that direction.
You know, I want to say one more time, we're going to put a link to that speech. I've mentioned this several times this week. We're going to put it on our Facebook page again today because the news did not cover that speech except for tiny little bits of it.
Shocking.
And it was incredible. Yeah. They covered Nancy Pelosi declaring she's going to explore impeachment. Can you comment on that, or is that something you have to...
No, it really is outside my area. One of the benefits of taking this job is I get to really focus on accomplishing the president's goals in the immigration arena and communicating them, and which I've been really glad to do. But it does keep me out of a lot of the other political back and forth. Also, I'm what's called hatched, so I can't talk about candidates or campaigns.
I know something you can talk about. I heard a pretty frightening briefing yesterday that I don't think is common knowledge, but I can talk about it. It was about Google and the fact that some of the decision making at Google on some of these teams, the teams are now one particular key team, 50% Chinese, and they're coming in on HB1 visas. And some of the worst decisions that are being made by Google in terms of censoring, really, content that you and I would think is pretty common sense and true, is coming from foreign nationals. And they're coming here on H-1B visas. And I think it's H-1B, right? I got that right.
H-1B.
H-1B visas. I think, is that let me ask you what the plan is for H-1B visas, because I know a lot of even Republicans are pushing for more of those.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about that?
So this is a capped program. I want to say, I don't remember the number exactly. I think it's 60,000, 65,000 a year. And they come for a particular employer. The employer actually applies. It isn't the individual who applies. And there are issues with this program, but under this president, so long as it exists, he's wanted to drive its value to the United States. So some rules have been put in place to push the value of the people coming to the U.S. on this. So we've seen an over 10% increase in master's degree holders, for instance, that sort of thing. The goal here from America's standpoint, like I said, the immigration system is supposed to be for America under this president.
Yeah.
And this is one of the examples where he's trying to drive the value to the United States economy of the people who are coming here, even on a temporary basis.
Okay. Ken, acting director of the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, Ken Cuccinelli, familiar voice and face to all of us, and now he's in a great position, and it just shows the effectiveness of President Trump in identifying and choosing someone like you, Ken. So God bless and keep you safe and keep doing what you're doing.
Thanks, Sandy. Good to be with you.
All right. My pleasure. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you and happy to be. This is one of my favorite things, honestly, when I get to talk to people in person and not by phone. When I did radio in the 90s in Chicago, I never would do it by phone. Never did interviews by phone. I always insisted that people come in because there's just a lot more energy. It's wonderful to see people eye to eye, too. And, of course, Mark Krikorian is a good friend of mine, so I get to see him eye to eye more than I do other guests. But it's so nice to have you in person, Mark.
Glad to be here, although I have a face for radio, so it might be better off.
Now, that's not true.
Me.
Let me say that Mark is honestly one of the great thinkers when it comes to immigration. He is the executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies, which is a think tank that contributes. They do so many studies about the stats, about what's happening in the border, how many people are coming here, and all of that. They are pro-immigration in the right way. Yeah.
Yep.
So that's a fair thing to say. Right, Mark?
Yes.
Excuse me. So you're always doing these great reports. What have you guys been working on in regard to that?
Well, there's million things we're working on all the time. One of the things we have coming up, or actually just came out, was about aging. In other words, people talk about immigration as the solution to an increase in our average age. Some people are getting older. Some people are having fewer kids. And we ran the numbers on this. It doesn't make that much difference. You'd have to have immigration 10, 15, 20 times more than it is now to really make much of a difference, even 50 years from now. So this kind of reinforces the general point that immigration isn't some kind of crutch that we can use to address...
To replace population.
To replace population, to keep the population younger, what have you, or to save Social Security, for instance. It's all nonsense. In other words, if we're going to have to... If Social Security is a problem, and, you know, it is, it will be... We've now, I think, we're taking in less money than we're sending out now, finally, for Social Security. Well, we have to make reforms to that, not imagine that somehow we can avoid the hard political decisions of reform and just import more people and somehow that's magically going to fix things.
I always, or never, whichever way I want to say it, I do not trust the stats on how many illegal immigrants are in this country.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's something we hear a lot.
Yeah.
FAIR just has a report out a couple of days ago.
It's a 13 or something,
yeah, no,
right?
14 million is what they had said. Now, yeah. I mean, it could be that. We haven't really kind of gotten up to our elbows in the assumptions that underlie that, you know, take it apart and see what we think about it. But it could be 14. I mean, the number 11 million is what people say. We've looked at it, and, you know, we're kind of confident in that 11 to 12 million number, because if it really were 14 is possible, because, you know, this is an estimate. But if it were, say, 22 million, like there was some estimate recently, it was last year, I think, it can't be that. Because if there were 10 million people missing, in other words, of 10 million extra illegal immigrants, you'd see it in the birth records, you'd see it in the death records, you'd see it in the grocery store statistics. There's no way 10 million people are missing. 2 or 3 million, yeah. So the 14 million estimate is possible. I mean, we don't use it yet because we haven't looked at the way they got to that estimate. But it just isn't, it can't be 20 million, 25 million. It's just not possible.
Well, that's interesting to hear you say, because I would have, without any information or data, I would have said there've got to be 12 million in California alone.
No. The thing is, a lot of people in illegal immigrant families are U.S.-born kids, so that often is what sort of confuses people. So you're talking about people in households headed by illegal immigrants. That's a lot more than 11 or 12 million because you've got U.S.-born kids. But so I think that's one of the mistakes people make. There's also one of the reasons the number hasn't gone up all that much over the years is that people always leave the illegal population too. Now, some of them go home. They give up. Small number die. Not that many because they're younger on average. But every year, some significant percentage of the new legal immigrants are, in fact, former illegal aliens laundering their status, so that there's always people leaking out of the illegal population. That's one of the reasons the number doesn't just keep going up.
Okay.
If you looked at how many people had at some point in the past been illegal aliens, or they are now, then, yeah, the number would be way bigger. But we're talking about how many are illegal now. Like I said, FAIR's estimate is about 14. We've always looked at 11 or 12 as the right number. It could be 14. In my the thing is, that's an important question, but in a sense, sort of what difference does it make? Even for 6 million illegal aliens, 5 million, isn't that way too many?
Yeah, well, yes, absolutely. I heard a briefing a few days ago, and the statement was made that it's possible to be in green card status for decades and never become a citizen. Is
sure.
Is that how you can verify that? But then, so should it be that way? I mean, should green card status be permanent?
Well, a green card is our nickname for legal permanent resident. So okay. In a sense, it's kind of in the term there. Obviously, we should be encouraging people who have green cards. In other words, they've come to America. We should encourage them when they are eligible to become citizens. The reason, of course, is that the point of immigration is to make Americans.
Yeah.
It's not to provide cheap labor to businesses. It's not to provide voters. It's to create Americans. The thing is, I'm reluctant to say you have a stopwatch on your green card, and you know after 10 years you have to apply for citizenship or you're going to be booted out. How would that work? Are we really going to boot people out who've lived here legally for 10 or 15 years? They have a house. Their kids are born here. And they say, okay, well, your time's up. And you're going to leave. I think the way to do it is to encourage people to become citizens rather than have some kind of deadline where you have to leave. And, you know, the fact is most people with green cards do eventually apply for citizenship. It just doesn't always happen at the 5-year mark, which is when they're first eligible. Because really, I mean, I put off things all the time. You know what
oh,
I mean?
Oh, no,
so,
surely not.
You know, it ends up being 7, 8, 9 yeah. years after they get their green yeah. cards. But I volunteered at citizenship classes, you know, helping yeah. people go over the test and all that stuff. And that's way I look at. I want to encourage people rather than sort of use a kind of a stick. In other words, a carrot rather than a stick.
Are you happy with the citizenship requirements that are in place?
They're a little lax. I mean, it shouldn't be super hard to be a citizen because, you know, we want people to become citizens. But like I said, I've taught the citizenship classes. The English language requirement is way, way too loose. You have to be able to read 3 sentences in English, speak 3 sentences in English, and then write out 3 sentences in English.
That is way too loose.
Very, very
heavens.
Minimal. Very minimal. And in fact, I know people who passed who really should not have. I mean, their English was not even functional. And then the citizenship part probably should be harder, too, because there's 100 questions you have to learn. Basic stuff. Who's the father of our country? Which ocean is off the East Coast? And, you know, you shouldn't have to be a PhD in political science to pass a citizenship test. But it should be a little harder because of those 100 questions, they can pick 10. You only need to get 6 right. So that's it. So it should be a little harder, but I don't think it should be, you know, super hard. But it definitely should be more demanding than it is.
Are you pleased with what the administration has done on immigration and regulations and laws and rules and executive orders,
yes,
et cetera?
Yes and no. I mean, a lot of these places, the administration's efforts have fallen short, haven't been because of them. They've been because of this, you know, sort of scorched earth resistance,
right,
where even the judges are acting politically and just making up rulings that they never would have made up if it weren't Trump at the other end of it. The one area I would like to see the president do more, I think, where they have fallen short, is he needs to be talking more about E-Verify and keeping illegal immigrants out of the labor market. It's not that he can make it mandatory on his own, necessarily, although I have an analyst, former immigration judge, former Hill staffer, who's actually written a piece saying, you know, arguably he could make it mandatory on his own, but then they would sue to try to stop
right,
it, you know, that
right,
sort of thing. But at the very least, talking up E-Verify, that's the free online system. So when you hire somebody, you actually check whether their Social Security number is real and matches the name and matches their age. It exists now. My center uses it. About half of all new hires last year went through it. But it's not mandatory. And the illegal immigrants are mainly in the other half that isn't being screened. And so making that mandatory and is essential. Again, Congress probably needs to do that. But what the president can do is keep shining a light on it. And he hasn't been doing that. That's the one thing that I would suggest that we have not seen that I would like to see out of this administration.
Could states do that?
States are doing it, yeah. And yeah, in fact, the way it is, and localities can do it too. There was a Supreme Court ruling that said, as a condition of your business license, you have to use E-Verify, that states can do that because they have control, or localities, they have control over business licensing. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce sued to stop that. Yeah, I forget which jurisdiction they sued, but they sued one, got up to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court said, no, they have control over business licenses, and they can make it a condition of having a business license. As soon as that happened, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce cried uncle, and they backed a mandatory E-Verify bill because what they wanted was one rule for the whole country. The problem is that Mississippi, for instance, has mandatory E-Verify, but, and this is where those raids were in the chicken plants.
Yeah, yeah, right.
There's no auditing, there's no enforcement, there's no policing, nothing at all. So you've got these crooked employers giving illegal aliens fake numbers and fake names to enter into E-Verify, basically to lie. They're committing fraud. So states can do it, but if states do it, they really need to put some effort into actually policing it and enforcing it, too.
So that's a powerful tool, and that would certainly remove a huge incentive for certainly economic migrants, which most of them are, I would argue, are from the southern border.
And it doesn't fix everything,
yeah,
but it is the single most important thing we need to do.
The other thing that the administration did through housing and urban development was to, as I understand it, stop letting illegal immigrants live in public housing.
Yeah, because the way it works is that if you have U.S.-born kids, you can get in and they'll, like, prorate the payment or something like that, as though it's somehow not a benefit for the illegal immigrant, because otherwise the illegal immigrant is the one. It's the same thing with food stamps. Illegal immigrants can get food stamps on behalf of their U.S.-born kids. Except the 4-year-old isn't going to the supermarket. He's not the only one eating the food. And you would have to feed your own kid otherwise if the taxpayer weren't paying. So this is an obvious benefit to illegal immigrants. So the housing and urban development move is important, but it's at the margins. It's one of the many small steps that we need to take.
Now, the Supreme Court has kind of a mixed performance on all matters immigration. And I honestly, Mark, be honest with you, I was traveling when the court, John Roberts, did something with a citizenship question. I don't even know what that was. Can you tell us what the final story is on that?
We haven't seen it. We haven't had a final decision yet on the citizenship question in the census, this is. And, you know, I mean, I'm for it. I think we should be asking citizenship. We have before. I mean, it's not like it's some radical thing.
Yeah.
In fact, we ask it, are you a citizen, in the ongoing survey that takes the place of the old long form, you know, the census long. There's no more long form. So they have this survey that's rolling. Well, they ask it in there, so what's the difference? So, I mean, the resistance to that is crazy, but it hasn't finally been resolved yet.
Would you agree that the number one issue for voters is immigration? Because I've heard some people say that, but I've seen some other polls that say no. They say, you know, health care or whatever.
No. Actually, I was just looking at a Harvard-Harris poll, which is pretty, it's nonpartisan. It's one of the Harvard, one of the schools at Harvard combines with the Harris polling agency, so they don't have an axe to grind, and if they do, it would be the other way. And, yeah, they had immigration as the number one issue for the largest share of people. So, and health care and other stuff was actually way down the list.
Isn't that interesting?
Now, that doesn't tell you which side because there are people on the left who will say it's the number one issue, but it was mainly Republicans it was the number one issue for. So obviously they're concerned about, you know, pro-control, and they want the laws enforced.
Yeah.
And some of it changes based on the news, you know, when the caravans really got people's attention, which is good. But once the caravans went away, it's not like the issue went away, but it wasn't in your face in the news in the same way.
Do you view it as a benefit or a detriment that Congress is now going to be in chaos? Not that part of the question, but that probably, likely, they will not be able to pass any immigration legislation.
Yeah, they weren't going to be passing anything even before this phony impeachment baloney happened. Because the problem here is the Democrats are unwilling to talk and to deal, because there are piecemeal, step-by-step things that they could potentially make deals on. We'll give you a little bit of this, you give us a little bit of that. It doesn't solve everything, it's not comprehensive. There is no interest. Democrats won't do it. So even before this impeachment stuff, there was no chance anything was going to get passed.
Didn't you think we'd have this settled maybe, I don't know, 30 years ago, Mark?
Nope.
We're still debating the same issues.
We'll always be debating. Because immigration isn't something you solve, it's something you manage. Okay. But yes, it has dragged on in this way terribly, and it's going to drag on for a while.
Mark Kerkorian, Executive Director for the Center for Immigration Studies. Mark, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much, and thanks for hanging around talk to me this morning.
Happy to do it.
Thank you, Sandy. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you back Monday. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.